This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm in the studio, as ever, with Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, Rich, and it's been a wonderful evening, hasn't it?
It has so far. And of course, I'm across from Mr. Arif Ruse, the man with the news.
Hello, everybody.
We do have an Instagram page, you know. And if you'd like to follow us and make us feel as though we've got friends, it is available on Instagram at
BFM Cruise Control. I think you're right about that. We do need some friends on there.
We need some more friends. And of course, follow Daniel on Facebook as well, and check out his website, dsf.my. We can all do with your continued support. This has been the PSA here on BFM 89.9, the business station. Right, show, as per usual, is broken up into two segments. We'll be doing some news courtesy of Ruse, and then a bit of a feature, the Toyota Rush 1.5, coming up a little bit later on. First and foremost, though, of course, the man with the news, Mr. Arif Ruse.
Right, so this week I don't think we're complaining.
Really?
Yeah, no, we're not.
Not even Daniel?
No.
No complaints.
So mainly because the Ministry of Transport and the Minister of Transport, Mr. Anthony Loke, says that the Road Transport Act is to be reviewed and amended to increase penalties. Now, obviously, increasing penalties is not exactly the greatest thing, but it needs to happen in any case. So what they are going to be amending is Act 333, also known as the Road Transport Act 1987, which was last updated in February 2013. So it's been 7 years. A lot of the conversation around this, though, has been surrounding the heavier penalties for reckless driving and driving under the influence. And I do think that all of us are in support of this.
Yes.
I'm in total support, but I have one question.
Yeah.
How would this affect all the YouTubers going up the Genting Run?
Yes.
Every week, somebody's doing the Genting Run. Nobody gets arrested. You know, everybody puts it on YouTube. They show what they're doing. I'm not saying they're reckless, but still, you're going on a very narrow road. There's villages left and right. There's people, you know, crossing the street. There are normal people driving at a normal pace. What will happen?
That's always been the gray area for YouTube, isn't it?
Yes,
it's like
exactly.
At the same time, you want to show what the car can do, but there are no real racetracks for us to sort of like explore.
We have a
that.
Racetrack, but we can't use it as and when we want to use it.
Yeah.
See, that's a complaint there already.
Not really a complaint about the news, about the racetrack.
You're right. Full support of this.
Yeah, totally. So what they are looking at when talking about the DUIs especially, of course, DUIs involves alcohol as well as drugs. So currently, our Road Transport Act says that current limit is 80 milligrams in 100 milliliters of blood. That is kind of hard to quantify right now. But the World Health Organization currently has its limits set at 50 milligrams. Mm-hmm. So I guess...
Why can't we set
positive.
It at 50 milligrams?
I don't know.
Right?
Yeah.
And why can't they, just for once, sit a patrol car in Bangsar or TTDI or down at...
Sri Hartamas,
or Bukit Bintang, you know.
Or Bangsa South.
Where
Friday, all the bars are.
Saturday, Sunday. You want people to start seeing some kind of enforcement, put vehicles on the road, police cars on the road.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
Outside Trek.
Yes. No, seriously.
Yeah, there's about 7 locations we can pinpoint.
We love our listeners. We love the fact that you drive cars, but the fact that some of you who are listening to this will go out and you will drink and you will drive that car on the weekend, we don't like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Because our family's on the road also.
Correct, and we shouldn't be supporting that, and neither should you guys.
Right. Yeah,
but
totally.
I have to interrupt you. I actually spoke to a police officer about this, and he said, it's not that we don't want to have cars at the 7 locations, which I also mentioned to him, but he said, we don't have the manpower to do it. We have not enough officers. We got to go after the mudroom pits. We got to go after, you know, people not wearing seatbelts. We got to go after all kinds of other criminals. There's not enough traffic police or police officers in general to enforce it all the time.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very difficult unless, you know, someone can come up with a way to hire more police officers and not cost the government too much money. Or we do self-regulation. You know, like if you have a friend and you know he's had a few drinks, you don't let him drive, for
I
sure.
I mean, that should just be the standard. But, I mean, in the UK, I've experienced this a few times where after you've been out drinking, you can leave your car there overnight absolutely for free, and you can trust it'll be completely safe, and then you know, take a cab home.
Depends where you are, but for the most part, yes. Yes.
Not in Southall
or Liverpool.
I suppose it's a bit difficult for us Malaysians to, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Leave our cars somewhere.
Right. And I understand that, you know.
But you know you're going to go out.
Yeah.
You know you're going to have at least one or two drinks.
So take a cab there.
Yeah, just take a cab.
Take a bus, you know, public transport, but do not drive if you know that.
Yep. Anyway, I think what's been said is generally just enforcement.
Let's start with self-enforcement.
Yep. Yeah. So next piece of news actually came from Mr. Daniel Fernandez.
Oh,
and
thank you.
He thinks that...
From DSF.my.
Yeah. Yes. Have you heard of that website?
It's new. It's very new.
It's music.
Right. So he says that new cars might be getting more unreliable.
Okay. Take any new car today. Any new car. It's got a smartphone in the car.
Yeah.
You know, it's got the digital screens. It's got all this new tech. It's got loads of safety tech. But how reliable is it? More and more cars are breaking down. More and more cars are just stalling. More and more cars are just not, you know, being as reliable as they are, even within the first 3 to 5 years of ownership. Now, some people ask me, do I have stats for this? No car company will give you stats on the number of cars breaking down or coming into their workshops. Now, it all started years ago with cars with double clutch gearboxes. Doesn't matter what brand, but they were all starting to fail. Then there were problems with cars, hybrid cars. You know, heating problem, hot starting, things like that. Now it's all the infotainment systems.
Yeah.
It's everything that's in the dash. But the problem is, you see, consumers want the latest. Car companies want to provide the latest to beat the other brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm brand A and I've put this new feature in, brand B will say, I've got to put that new feature and more in to bring some consumers over. So this is a game that's, you know, it's constantly a fight against each other.
It's not just the car companies, though. I mean, even if you look at stuff like media and journalism,
it's the
same problem.
Yes.
It's the first person to get the story out. They see themselves as the winners.
Yes. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be the full story.
Or accurate for the most part.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that.
This is why these days we always see a lot of like reports online with more to come.
Yeah.
Check back later.
Yes. updates.
Ah.
But you see, the thing is, this unreliability has come to a point where even, you know, the world's most reliable cars are starting to give problems. And if you look deeper into these problems, a lot of it is actually coming from tech. Not the engine, not the gearbox. It's infotainment tech. It's speedometer tech. You know, like now you've got digital meters. Digital meters are beautiful to look at. But when they fail, they fail.
Yep.
And then, you know, you have to take it into the workshop. You got to get it, you know, reset and everything else. That's a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of effort. And you have a busy day. Everybody's got a busy day every day. You know, you can't be going to the workshop for 3-4 hours just to get your infotainment system or your digital instrument cluster reset.
Yeah.
So what is the end game? How long more are we going to live with cars like this?
I was going to ask you the same question because it feels like you're saying we need to rewind a little bit.
I think we need
back to simpler days, you know, like Fred Flintstone.
Really Fred Flintstone. 15, 20 years back is good enough, you know?
I think there is always a sweet spot in the auto industry, isn't there? Mm. I mean, people always talk about like, the late 50s were when cars as they knew it were perfected. There were no such things as like digital motor electronics and all that stuff. And even when those came in, the engine management systems of the old days, of the 80s, the 70s, they only started really working properly in cars in the 90s.
Right.
And by the time it hit the 90s, suddenly everybody was putting onboard computers that controlled your ABS, your braking system, your this, your that, your everything. And I think that we are going to hit that sweet spot very soon.
How would you feel, Arif in particular, about a car that didn't have electric windows, for example?
I have to wind down. I wouldn't mind.
Right.
Ha! No, but you see, electric window, they've already solved the problem. almost.
Right,
almost.
Yeah.
But
what
I'm saying is if you really look closer at all the problems now, it's not the problem that is. It's not the problems that are being developed by the car companies.
Right.
Everything that's sort of going wrong is coming from a third-party vendor.
Ah.
The car brand, you know, develops a car, engine, gearbox, drive system, suspension, everything else. But then what comes into the cabin and all the little toys, that comes from a third party. And the third parties are the ones really, you know, struggling to make all this work. Because why? A handphone, it's simple enough to operate because, well, you keep it in your pocket, you walk around with it. If you drop it, you buy a new one. But, you know, a car, when you put all these things in a car, you got, you know, you're driving around, there's dust, there's rain, there's water, there's bumpy roads, yeah, there's extreme heat. There's a lot of...
Okay, let me ask you a quick question before we move on then. What did you think about Sony announcing that they'd built a fully electric car?
I thought that was a great idea because I think now it's companies like that that should be building cars.
Yeah.
Because why? They don't need to get an engine and gearbox anymore. Mm. Suspension you can buy from a third party. You know? So what else do you need?
If everything's going to be autonomous, Sony should build a car that, you know, Sony's been building home lifestyle systems forever. Yeah. So eventually the car is just going to be a moving home.
So Samsung can do the same thing. Yeah. Panasonic can do the same thing. Sharp can do the same thing. Huawei can do the same thing. But I've got some news for you guys. This, you heard it here first.
Oh, here we go.
Okay. I think the perfect car would be a car that say, okay, say, let's take the brand Fiat, okay, because it's not in Malaysia, we can just... Say Fiat comes to Malaysia and says, okay, I'm going to build a car and it's going to be a great car. Engine, gearbox, everything there. But there's no infotainment. The dashboard is blank. There's just a blank area there. And it's got a multiple pod to plug in your smartphone. Whether it's Android, Apple, any kind of smartphone. And that becomes your dashboard and infotainment system.
And because of 5G and IoT and all of that stuff, your phone will also become a speedometer and connects to the car automatically.
Exactly.
Dashboard available in the Android store or in the Apple iStore.
And if tomorrow your phone fails, you just go and buy another one.
Somebody quickly start a software company. That's coming. That's coming for sure. Yep.
You heard it here first.
Yep.
Right. We better move on then.
Yep. To the car launches and all that. This first one is actually quite related to the previous story, which is, you know, unreliability. Because it's been announced that the locally produced Proton X70 will apparently get a 7-speed dual clutch transmission.
And it's going to be launched next week.
Is it?
Yes.
Ah,
the test drive for the media is going on. It just finished today, sorry.
Yeah. Did you go for that?
I'm here.
Oh.
But I sacrificed my time with the new X70 for you guys.
But in any case, the dual clutch transmissions in Malaysia have got a really, really bad rep in the past 10 years. From all the brands, yep. And back then, they've always been known to fail. But it seems like today, even though manufacturers say that they are just as reliable as any other gearbox, there seems to be a trend in the industry where, you know, bigger car manufacturers are ditching the DCT for regular
automatic. 6-speed or 7-speed.
Yeah, yes. So it's kind of curious why Proton decided to do this and decided not to put in an 8-speed automatic transmission or something like that.
Well, it's coming from Geely, and Geely says they've made it so refined and so reliable, there should be no issue. I'm just waiting to see whether they can get this done, because if they get it done and done right, all those big German companies and American companies are going to be
shaking.
Jobs are going to be lost.
Moving on to global cars, we have heard a car that's absolutely not relevant to us, the new Hummer.
Mm.
It's back and it's branded as a GMC, General Motor Company.
Right.
So it's not a Hummer brand by itself. It's all electric. And what they claim is 1,000 horsepower, 15,000 newton meters of torque, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in under 3 seconds, and it will probably weigh something like 5 to 7 or 8 tons.
Just look at those stats. 0 to 100 in 3 seconds, yet it still weighs 5 tons.
More than 5 tons, probably.
It's like a train.
It is.
Yeah. But you see, this technology, I think, will soon be transferred to military tanks.
Tanks,
yes.
Yeah. I think that's what's going to happen.
That's what,
or vice versa, in fact, I'd imagine.
Yeah. The other car that was really interesting that was revealed was the Mini Cooper SE. I think a lot of people were excited about this, especially for me personally, because Volkswagen killed the Beetle.
Correct.
They're not making an electric version. All these retro cars are dying.
Yes.
So the Mini Cooper SE is one or two that has survived. And what it is basically a BMW i3 in a Mini Cooper S.
Which makes a lot of sense.
The difference is the i3 is rear-wheel drive and the Mini Cooper SE is front-wheel drive. And it's 145 kilograms heavier than a regular Cooper S. You can still get about 270 kilometers of range on the car and some funky wheels and new colors. But because of Brexit, it probably won't come out this year or next year.
Well, it's already plans for Mini to move out of UK. You heard about that? And they're going to Netherlands. So that's where the new platform is going to be made.
No comment.
There could be a chance because BMW and Mini already have an agreement with a Chinese company to build cars in China. It could be coming out of China. You never know.
You heard it here first.
Yes. Nope. And Just to let you know, yesterday BMW Malaysia made an announcement of how many vehicles they delivered in 2019.
Go on then.
A total of 11,567 combined of BMW, Mini and Motorrad motorcycles. So Malaysians are not having a hard time.
No. They did say they recorded, I think, a huge amount of increase in the 3 Series sales, yes. The X5 sales. So Things are going pretty good for them, I assume.
Yes. Let's end this moment on a positive moment.
Yes.
Let's do that. Yes. You are, of course, tuned in to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking all about the Toyota Rush 1.5. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes here on BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. You are tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. And my name is Rich Bradbury. Today I'm joined in the studio by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, Rich.
And of course, the man always with the news, Mr. Arif Roos.
Hello.
We have started with some news earlier. We spoke a little bit about reckless and drunk driving, how the Road Transport Act is likely to be reviewed and amended. That's Act 333, if you didn't know what that was. Are new cars getting a little bit more unreliable? We spoke about that. And then we had some local and some global car launches. If you missed that, it's on the podcast. You can listen to it there. Now, though, time for a little bit of a rush. Me and Arif are going to sit back. Well, Daniel talks to us about the Toyota Rush 1.5.
Don't rush.
Okay, so you've seen it on the road, but you thought it was a Perdua Arus.
Yes, pretty much.
That's the thing. When they launched the car, we said to ourselves, okay, this is actually a Perdua Arus, and the Perdua Arus is actually a Toyota Rush. There was a lot of hush-hush of the Rush launch and the Arus launch because they didn't want it to challenge each other. But the funny thing is, if you go to the Perdua factory in Rawang, it's coming out of the same factory. Mm. Both cars come out exactly the same factory. One goes left, one goes right. The one that goes right gets a little bit of added trim added on it, which is the Toyota Rush. And then it's sent off to Toyota showrooms and they add in the blind spot monitoring side view mirrors. And that's it. So end of the day, it's the same vehicle. Mm. So my question to them was, I mean, because Toyota owns part of Perdua and Daihatsu owns part of Perdua and Perdua has got shares, you know, with whatever the case is. But
it's a complex situation.
It's all one ecosystem. Why do you need two cars, two crossovers that compete against each other in the same segment, you know? And if you think about it, both crossovers do not have a competitor in this price range because the Rush is below 100,000, the Arrows is below 80,000. There is no competitor in the market that comes close. I mean, the nearest competitor, I could say, is probably the Mazda CX-8, which is double the price of the Toyota Rush. So that's a totally different segment. So if there's no competitor, I'm thinking to myself, people at UMW Toyota, can you explain to me why you think someone is going to walk into a Toyota showroom to buy the Rush when the Arus is almost 18,000 cheaper? But they said, we expected to sell about 4,000 units, 3,000 plus units.
And that's a lot.
And they sold. And they sold.
Because of badge.
Because it's amazing how Malaysians, I mean, when I got into this car, it's exactly the same. There's a little bit of trim, you know, very mild trim. And then, of course, the logo and then the exterior trim. But it's exactly the same. It drives the same. It's got everything, you know, the blind spot monitoring, that's a small issue. You can even install that aftermarket. But why are people paying that extra money? The Toyota badge is so powerful that they're willing to pay that extra and walk home or drive home in a Toyota. And then when you get into the car and you think to yourself, okay, no, I've already bought a Toyota Rush, say for example, what am I getting for 90,000 ringgit? It's between 93,000 to 98,000 ringgit. You get 7 seats. Okay, the rear third row seat is a little bit narrow. Kids, no problem. But once they're teenagers, short distance, fine. You know, just going for a makan or going to the mall, fine. But if you're talking anything more than 1 hour, they will feel uncomfortable. The great news is you've got rear full length aircon vents and with its own control. So you get very good cooling at the back. Now, with the third row in use, there's not much luggage space. It's not a big vehicle. It's not very wide also. It's a bit narrow. So it's great for parking. Turning radius, fantastic. It sits high up. 1.5 engine, you know, it's not built to go fast. This is a family vehicle. A lot of people say, oh, you know, can it go up Genting? I like when people ask me that. Yes, it can go up Genting.
You seem to get asked that a lot as well.
Yes. Even a 1 liter can go up Genting. You know, the only thing is you won't be able to go up very fast. Mm. You know, you have to take a leisurely drive. You're driving a 1.5. You bought a 1.5 because you want to save fuel and you want to save on road tax. And this is what it does. You know, if you wanted something with more power, get a CX-8. You know, or get something bigger.
Is this the only engine that they have?
The only engine. And this vehicle is sold around the region. And it's doing very well in other countries simply because there's a whole bunch of people out there who said, okay, I've got a 5-seater car. Now I have an extra family member. I need something bigger. And, you know, there's a psychological effect with Southeast Asia that, you know, I need to have something slightly higher because everywhere is going to be flooded, you know. Everywhere the roads are bad. Whether there's bad roads or floods, people still want something that's high up. This is not a four-wheel drive. It looks like a four-wheel drive. Can it go off-road? Of course, because it's sitting high up. But can he go and do some serious mud plunging? No. That's why you see all the pictures I took all in the city. Eh? No off-road picture. Eh? You notice, eh?
Wasn't going to say anything.
Yes, I didn't go into the jungle with it. Eh? Yeah, yeah. Okay. So at the end of the day, it's very simple. You buy the Perdua Arus if you're really not bothered about the badge. Mm. And there's nothing wrong with the Perdua badge. I mean, I look at it this way. I'll probably buy an Arus and put a Toyota badge.
I mean, that's what a lot of people did.
Exactly. And, you know, it was very hard for me to notice this because when I was sitting in the car over the weekend and my kids with me, you know, every time one goes by, they say, oh, Dad, look, there's another Rush. And look, I said, no, that's an Arus with a Rush with a Toyota badge on it. And it's true because why? It's only the side cladding that's a little bit different and the front, a little chrome trim.
Yeah.
But if you take that away, you know it's basically Arus. So
what about the molding on the hood? Is it same for both of them?
Same.
All right.
So basically this car is, I think, value for money. If you're looking for a 7-seater in the city, you need to go around, you got a cheap, you know, cheap running car. You know, it's a low cost running car. It's not something very complicated. Like earlier we said, like it doesn't have any fancy gizmos inside. It's got a simple infotainment system, simple meters. It'll never fail. It'll run for 8 to 10 years without any worry.
Or even longer.
Even longer, yes. So it's one of those cars, I say, it's a no-brainer. Of course, a lot of people say, oh, it needs this, it needs that. Well, if you want all the added stuff, you got to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want all that tech, you got to pay for it. Whether you're going to use it or not, that's your problem.
So, you know, Perdua launched that ASA safety system. Is it exactly the same as Toyota's one?
Same.
Exactly the same.
Same. And I tried it out, it works same. And the Toyota one comes with the Perdua built-in smart tech. So they've taken something from Perdua and put into that also.
I guess this goes along the lines of, I think it was a week ago where Perdua released a press release where they said like they want to become the R&D hub for Toyota and Daihatsu models in ASEAN, right?
Correct.
So I guess this is kind of that one step. We have some good ideas and we can make your car and sell it for cheaper.
Right. Because Perdua is actually thinking about what Asians want. Mm. So people in Southeast Asia. In Japan, I'm not saying they're not thinking about it, but they're thinking global.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you just want something for the ASEAN community. And this works very well. And Perdua is good at making upper body designs. I mean, look at the Axia.
Yeah.
It's done here. It's not something that's done in Japan. The new Myvi.
Good-looking car.
Both good-looking cars. I think the next Perdua that comes out might be something from Daihatsu, but the upper body design will be from them.
So how much is the Arus going for?
About 78,000 ringgit.
Not bad.
Yeah.
And this goes for about 98,000
ringgit. Okay. So I want to ask who its competitors are. And
competitors are double the price.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're talking about
seven-seater
crossover, double the price.
And what is its standout points? And are there anything?
To be honest, I really can't find a standout point, but it's a good-looking vehicle. In certain colors, I like it in white. A lot of people like it in blue. I like it in white because in white, it doesn't look as small as it is.
I'm assuming that what you'd like about it is the fact that it's reasonably priced.
If I was earning RF salary,
wow,
this is what I would buy.
Don't do this.
No, because you earn more than me, right?
Exactly. Okay. But if I'm earning Richard's salary, then I'll go for, you know, something double the price.
Right, so I don't know. I still have a lot of questions about like why the Perdua Arus exists and why the Toyota Rush exists. Because if you remember back then, Toyota Rush, it was the big five-door that we see sometimes.
Yes.
But remember Perdua launched the Perdua Nautica?
The Nautica was not a 7-seater. It was a 5-seater.
Yeah.
Yes.
So why didn't they just do something like that? Why release exactly the same product?
Okay. I think because there is no 5-seater product for this. If there is, so it's probably just got a big loading bay at the back.
Yeah.
That means they just removed it. Because a third row seat is not really a seat. You know, it's not like
something.
It's something like, you know, You can buy and put it in another vehicle. It's a very simple contraption.
Yeah.
It's very light. It's easy
to move. It's like one of those beds that you go and stay at your friend's at. It's a roll-out sofa.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hidden in the attic or something.
Something
like that.
Right? Like that. So you don't really want to sit on it, but you need if you need it every now and again, it's there.
Yeah. For example, say if you're a very outdoors person, you know, you're a person who likes to go camping and all this kind of stuff, and you're just maybe a single guy or maybe just you and your girlfriend, you'll say, okay, I removed the third row seat completely and I use it for loading stuff.
Mm. You know what? Actually, the Rush and the Aruz is actually quite a good, you know, adventurous car.
Exactly.
It's huge.
Yes.
It's
you can still go off-road.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, not heavy off-road, but you still can go off-road.
I mean, all you need is just to drive up the path to wherever you're hiking, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So I have one final question. Why are these two cars so similar and should somebody have added something else onto it?
If you ask me, the reason why they're similar is because there's no reason to make it so different.
Yeah.
Because making it so different, cost will be really high. You know, mold costs and everything else. They've already done enough to show a little bit of differentiation.
Are the colors choices the same?
Color choices are different. And if you look at the front, you can notice the grills are different.
Yeah.
The bottom fender is different. The lights are the same, you know. So I was lucky enough to get it, you know, the picture, the car right side by side with the Arrows. But if you look at the rear, it's exactly the same except for the little badge, you know?
I mean, is there anything that they could have added from a different Toyota and thrown into a Rush?
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so. And I think they thought about it and said, we don't really need to do much because we'll sell about 4,000 units.
You know? And they kind of want to keep the price on 100
exactly,
grand.
You know? And this is not their bread and butter model because they've got other cars that are selling much better, you know? So this is something which, it's there. You can buy it. It's in our showrooms. You know, we make a bit of money out of it. Why not?
Yeah.
And there you have it, folks. That was the feature for this week, of course. It was the Toyota Rush 1.5. Thank you very much for tuning in, of course, into Cruise Control. We'll be back same time, same place next week. If you missed any part of the show, don't forget to download the podcast wherever you normally get your podcasts from. We are, of course, also on Spotify, and our Instagram handle is
at BFM Cruise Control.
This has been Cruise Control. My name is Rich Bradbury. That's been Daniel Fernandez. And, of course, Mr. Arif Ruz. We'll see you next week. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.